where we surmise it's humid. Even though it's only April, I imagine they snuck a little humidity in.
Yeah, they snuck a little. It's not bad.
Not too bad, yeah.
No.
Not the dead of summer, but where do they... I was going to say they play at Enron Field. I think
wow.
a little. I think that's a little in the past. Is that? Yeah, that's
Enron.
Enron. Jeez,
they
were still in the National. They were still in the National League when it was Enron.
Enron Field. What is? Is it? It's not Minute Maid Park
no,
anymore.
No, it's like
it just changed this year.
Yeah, it's like let me get it. It's something way different.
But it's the same grounds.
Yeah.
As Enron Field and Minute Maid.
It's called Dakin Park.
Enron Field. That was
called. Dakin
that was pretty. Yeah, that was pretty cool. I'm sure the Astros are really happy to be associated with that.
Yeah, no, I think they were very happy to get up off of Enron.
Yes,
they need to keep it the juice box though. Minute Maid was just perfect for the juice box.
I was saying this to somebody that it's one of those stadiums that no matter what they do, we're going to be calling it Minute Maid juice box for quite a bit.
It's hard not to.
Like Qualcomm changed their name, right, at the end, and no one really called it that.
SDCCU,
right? That's right.
Yeah, it didn't get a lot of play.
No.
I don't know that the SDCCU got the bang for the buck on that one. Because if people said, I'm going to SDCCU, people said, well, where's that? Like they didn't.
Or they'd be like, you're going to the bank?
Yeah, they weren't.
It's Saturday night. You know it's closed, right?
They weren't quite sure. Padres tomorrow night will send Kyle Hart to the mound. In Houston, and the Astros are going with a rookie, Mr. Gusto, Craig Gusto, Bill, John, Randy.
Ryan,
thank you.
Is it Ryan?
I don't know. It might
Listen to you guys. Craig.
Yeah, it's
Ryan.
How did you know?
We talked about him on the round table, and I always liked the last name Gusto. I think he needs to pitch with gusto.
Well, it'll be his second career start tomorrow night. He's a right-hander. And then the Padres get their aces, man. You get Michael King and Dylan Cease back-to-back.
That means we get Fromber and who?
Wisniewski Saturday night and Fromber Sunday. And this I found out today during the roundtable. Go to Detroit Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but don't have to face Tarek Skubal. So that's a little break from the pitching gods there.
Did Skubal.
No Skubal.
No one's mad about that.
Nobody's going to complain.
This is the first trip where you get into real baseball. And I mean that in terms of travel. We got the Sunday night game.
Oh, yes. Monday kind of early evening.
And then a Monday early evening in Detroit.
Uh-oh.
And so, we're going to get in quite
And I
late.
Think it's Detroit's Eastern time zone.
It is.
Eastern,
yes.
Which
yes,
means you're going to lose an hour somewhere along the
way. But hey, I checked the weather. Supposed to be 60s. In the 60s.
We got lucky.
Yes.
We got very lucky.
Supposed to be in the 60s.
I will be prepared if Mother Nature decides to change her mind on that, though.
Listen to you old ladies talking about the weather a week from now. That's something that my wife does.
Listen to me, Chris. Jesse and I have been checking this forecast for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I do the same.
We didn't want to get caught up in that Chicago cold and not be prepared.
No, I give you guys a hard time.
I mean, like 2 weeks ago, the Yankees and the Tigers were playing in Detroit, and it was snowing. So.
Yeah, so. Hopefully that will not be the case.
Thank you.
Padres return home Friday, April 25th. Tampa Bay will be here starting Tuesday, April 29th. As if you need another reason to see the Giants, this Tony Gwynn rookie bobblehead, Tony Gwynn Sr.
He's got
amazing.
He's got the pallbearers on. That's what we call those all-white batting gloves right there.
The pallbearers.
Yes.
I love the nicknames for these things.
Well, I see what you mean, Tony. They're kind of nifty, and you would wear those to carry a casket around.
That is the idea of those.
Pallbearers.
I actually heard that from Mike Cameron. He told me that.
I like that one. Tell Mike Cameron that's a good one. All right, we got the Daily Gambit. Scrabe, we better get rolling.
Do you like money?
I think about money a lot.
Do you like money without doing anything?
Winning.
Do you want to make money while watching sports?
I think Washington is a mortal lock.
Washington! Woohoo!
If you answered yes, this is your segment. Just don't blame us when you lose.
Well, nothing is ever your fault.
It's your game. Take it.
Gwen and Chris go through the top bets of the day in The Daily Gambit on 97.3 The Fan.
Daily Gambit is our daily sports betting segment here on Gwen and Chris. Please, everybody, gamble responsibly. I'll go through these quick since we're limited on time. Orlando was a 6-point favorite over Atlanta the other night. The Magic, we all chose the Magic. The Magic ended up winning by 25, 120-95. I kind of want to talk about Trae Young.
Trae Young had a tensor tantrum.
Yes, he did. It was slightly hilarious, but at the same time, it was kind of sad to see.
He had enough.
I'm taking my ball and going home.
And then he like gave it back to the ref, and then he stole it back from the ref.
He like did the yo-yo to the ref. Right. That was hilarious.
Yeah, he was very upset.
He just wanted to rest for the next game. Get out of there early.
Golden State, -7 over Memphis the other night. I chose the Warriors. You guys chose Memphis. Golden State won, but they only won by 5, so they did not
Real quick cover. Note on that game, because I think it's important. Tony, I don't know if you saw the end of the Warrior-Memphis game, but the Warriors led by 1 point with about 20 seconds to go, and Steph was dribbling the ball up the court. Ja Morant reached behind to try to steal it. He never touched it. Steph lost it out of bounds. Should have been Memphis ball trailing by 1. They blew the call. Memphis did not have any challenges. And after the game, this is kind of a huge thing, right? It went back to Golden State. They end up winning the game. They had to foul, etc. So it's kind of a game-determining play. The NBA came out and said they screwed up.
Yeah.
Here's what I wonder. Should they really be doing this in a world where people are gambling hundreds of thousands of dollars on these games? Saying we cost Memphis the victory.
I remember why they started doing this, but now things have changed so much since then. You're right. They probably shouldn't be announcing these things because unfortunately, people are dumb enough to hurt somebody because of something.
Right.
Like this.
I mean, a referee.
I lost my life savings.
Well, you bet Memphis on the money line. You're thinking you could have won. And they took it away from you, and that's a huge call.
That's part of the game of gambling.
Well, I agree. I agree with you.
It used to be a part of the game. Right.
I agree with you, Scray, but don't tell that to the guy who lost his house on that call.
He probably shouldn't have been betting his house on Memphis.
No kidding, Scream.
Disagreeing with you. I'm just pointing something out.
It's like the people that are mad because the Fire Festival 2 was canceled.
That's not the point. The point is that a referee could now get shanked because someone lost their house.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I totally understand.
That's what Chris is getting at. Like, maybe they shouldn't be doing this.
Calling attention to the fact that they blew the call.
No, I agree with you guys. It just makes the loss that much worse. Like, hey, sorry, we've kind of lost the game for you, but thumbs up for the next time.
I also want to see, he drives me crazy. Ja Morant, there's a clip of him from above the rim, Tony, on Twitter today. In that game, driving down the lane, hanging in the lane with a guy right in his face, taking his left hand off ball or offhand, throwing the ball off the backboard while he's still in the air, catching it with his right hand and laying it in off the window. And as the Twitterer said, Michael Jordan never did that. And I got to agree with him. That was unbelievable. If you have a chance to see this, you're not going to believe what you're looking at.
At the end of the night, that's how I do my laundry, you know?
Okay. And another classic comedy moment from Scraby.
That was fun.
Can't laugh at your own jokes, buddy.
I've been doing that a lot lately. Golden State, Memphis, total score over under 228. Chris went under, Tony and I went over. It was 237. Steph Curry, who had more points? Steph Curry -2 or Ja Morant? We all chose Ja. Ja had 22. Steph had 37 minus those two, 35. So we lose.
By the way, another unbelievable performance from somebody that's almost as old as I am. He scored 15 of the last 19 points.
Steph.
He took over the game. Incredible.
We've been watching Steph so long that we watched his oldest be a baby and now like a teenager.
Riley?
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
What a game he had, really.
Final three, and then we need to go to break. We'll have to do our bets later, but Cubs -1.5 over the Padres on Tuesday night. We all chose the Padres, and we were all right because the Cubs only won by 1 run, so we win that one. Dodgers -1.5 over the Rockies Tuesday night. I went with the Rocks thinking they were turning it around. That was stupid. Dodgers 6-2. Aaron Judge, runs plus hits plus RBIs over under 2.5 on Tuesday night's game. Tony and I went over. Chris went under. He had one run, two hits, no RBIs. So he ended up going over with three.
Good for him. All right, we will make our picks in a little bit. There isn't a lot tonight, guys. The NBA playoffs are idle. And there's very limited baseball
as well.
NBA
playoffs haven't started yet, Chris.
You're right. So once again, officially, the Bulls did not make the playoffs since they were eliminated in the play-in by the Heat last night.
But we'll, the NBA has made everything so confusing.
It is pretty confusing, I must say.
Like, I if mean, you guys are hardcore fans.
Playoffs don't start till Sunday, guys.
Yeah, you can say that, but last year you were in the play-in with us, so right. you were singing a different tune last year.
Hey, listen, we weren't in the playoffs last year until we got into the playoffs.
Okay, all right, Mr. Jerry Buss. We'll take a timeout, check Buss. Some traffic. Gwen and Chris rolls on.
5:18 in here in Houston, 3:18 there in San Diego. Welcome into Gwen and Chris. Tony Husband, play-by-play for MLS season pass, will join us shortly to talk a little SDFC. Coming off of a tough road loss out in Denver, we'll conversate a little bit about that. Scraby is in the middle of his phone call, but I'm looking at your segment coming up here next, Chris. I don't know if you've looked at it.
Oh boy,
there are a lot of subject matters on here that I'm pretty sure you're not going to know anything about.
What is he doing to me?
I don't know, except for the Lee Corso one. I'm pretty sure you're not going to be up to date on...
I'm certainly not going to have a lot on the Drake-Kendrick Lamar feud.
I put that in there for Tony, but our guest is ready, so we're going to have to carry this over.
Home.
You're just going to go home?
During that segment, yes. I live close.
Let's bring in, let's bring in Tony Husband's play-by-play. For MLS season pass. Tony, thank you for your time today. How are you?
Very well, guys. Yeah, nice to join you, and looking forward to what should be a really good game this weekend in Charlotte.
No doubt about it. I want to talk a little bit about SDFC's last loss. They go to Denver, they lose 3-2, and we've often been talking about this year, or at least we've had guests on talk about how good they've been playing out of the back, how precise they've been. That seemed to kind of rear its ugly head in that last game against Colorado. They made some turnovers, and Colorado was able to capitalize on it. Is that kind of the risk of playing out of the back, especially if a team is going to be pressuring you high like that?
Absolutely, yeah. Look, it's high risk, high reward kind of soccer. It's something that we see increasingly teams do these days. Some teams and some players are better suited to it than others. San Diego have come into MLS and they've recruited with players in mind that can play to this identity and to this style. I heard Mikey Virus say earlier on today about how the identity is a non-negotiable factor of this team. This is how they are going to play. Now, if you're going to play like that, you are going to give away goals during a season. It's just inevitable. You are also going to make mistakes. You are at times on not your best days. You're going to look a little bit sloppy like they did last weekend in Colorado. But the reward of that as well can be in what you can achieve at the other end when you can break a team's press and play past them, get round them. So high risk, high reward. It makes for great viewing. It can also make for quite edge of your seat kind of watching if you're a fan.
Well, I think Mikey Varas is doing the right thing. I mean, we got a new team in San Diego. I think we love the style that they're playing. People are flocking to the games and, you know, really enjoying it. And, you know, you look at these guys, SDFC, third in scoring in the league and goals scored, or second, actually, tied for second. So they're putting some, you know, some excitement into it. Charlotte, on the other hand, this is a team that's actually got a little better record than San Diego does. And they're not allowing much. Like, you know, you talk about defense, they've only given up 7 goals the whole year in 8 games. So what style wins on Saturday, and how does SDFC, impose its style?
Well, you're absolutely right. It's going to be a contrast between these two teams. So Charlotte, managed by Dean Smith, an English center half in his day. I can remember watching Dean as a player. His priority is organization. His team will be pragmatic. They will sit in what we call that low block at times. They will be difficult to break down, and they're not going to push. They don't normally push too high up the field to try and win the ball. So I think San Diego will have that opportunity to play to their strengths, to play out from the back and play through the lines of the field. So it makes it an intriguing tactical battle. The question for San Diego is going to be, how do they get round the back of Charlotte? How can they create space? How can they get their game changers into positions to score goals? 7 goals against for Charlotte all season shows you that not too many teams have achieved that. So that will be the pressing tactical question for Mikey Varus and his coaching staff going into this weekend is, well, how can we open Charlotte up and create chances? You wouldn't normally expect a high-scoring game against a team like Charlotte. So it's going to be about taking that all-important opportunity when it comes. It could be about when it comes down to a set-piece situation. Is it from a free kick or a corner?
Tony Husband joins us here. Play-by-play for MLS season pass will be on the upcoming game here with SDFC in Charlotte. And Tony, as someone, a veteran in soccer and having, you know, done so many games, MLS season is a long one. At what point does somebody like yourself start to kind of have some of these end of the season rewards start to come into a little bit of focus, right? I mean, Mikey Varus has obviously got this team playing well. Is it too early to start thinking about, you know, possible candidates for a coach of the year? There's so much season it. I know in baseball, you get to about the halfway point, you start to kind of put these things into focus. But Mikey Varus has been off to such a good start. There's a lot of conversation here in San Diego about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting analogy with the baseball. You're looking 80 games in sometimes. You're really looking at where the season's narrative can be told. And likewise, in a soccer season like MLS, it's a long year. It's played across some quite different climatic conditions as well. There's the rigors of and the heat of a summer to come. There's tournament play as well with League's Cup. And then there's this kind of mad dash as you go into the fall towards the playoffs. For me, I think it is too early to be thinking too much about those things. I don't think too many within the walls of San Diego will be thinking too much about that. But that's not take away from the fact this has been a really impressive start. They're a great team to watch play. Like you mentioned there, people want to come and watch San Diego play. They're easy on the eye to enjoy watching as any soccer fan. So I'm particularly looking forward to seeing them live and in person for the first time this weekend on Apple TV. But I've always made it a point. A coach in the UK once said to me, never looks at the league standings until about 10 games into a season. So right now we're just approaching the cusp of kind of 10 games. It's week 9 effectively this week. So we're on the point where we can start to look at this season and start to look at who are going to be the contenders and who are going to be the also-rans, who's got a lot of work still to do. So we're not too far away from that now. And, you know, the omens are pretty good for San Diego, but I would caution it's still early.
Okay. Tony, I'm looking at, you know, you look at the San Diego roster, and I got to believe it's similar to other teams in MLS. I mean, you got players from Ghana, you got Argentina, you got Panama, you got Germany, you got Northern Ireland, Norway. Then you got a guy from San Diego, and then you're back to Mexico City and Denmark. How do these guys all get along? How do they put soccer teams together? To me, baseball, I mean, these are kids from all over the country. They're not from all over the world. Doesn't everybody grow up with a little different style of soccer where they're from? So how do you piece this all together? I mean, I would imagine a lot of these players have to make some concessions so that they can fit in with the rest of the guys.
Yeah, it's a really great point. I mean, I suppose the one-liner answer for you would be just kind of, well, that's where soccer as a global game maybe just differs a little bit from the kind of traditional North American sports. You've got players who've been playing this game wherever they've come from around the world, probably since almost the moment that they could stand on 2 feet. But you're absolutely right. Culturally, the game is different in different parts of the country. I mean, I talk about it as an Englishman who has watched a lot of soccer, particularly, you know, 20, 30 years ago when I was growing up, English teams would never do anything like what we see San Diego doing with this playing out from the back and short passes, getting the goalkeeper so involved. You would think it would be crazy to employ that tactic. But all these different cultures come together, and that's actually what makes MLS a really great league to watch, because it's got such a diverse group of players from all over the world. And the beauty of a good coach is that, you know, you've got to try and mesh these groups together. But, you know, you might have the Europeans who come from the colder climates of Europe and the traditional Scandinavian backgrounds where they're a bit more known for more of an English style, a bit more direct. And then you'll have the technical Southern European players who are so good on the ball and they love the ball. They never want to give the ball away. And then South American players with all the passion and skill they bring to it. So that is one of the great things about the league right now, is that we have all that diversity across it, and you are trying to see the, you know, which team comes out best with which style, and it's reflected as well in the teams. You know, 30 teams now in this league, and you know, no two teams are exactly the same. There's a lot of different styles across this league.
Yeah, certainly something I enjoy, seeing the different styles and seeing, you know, the different cultures kind of come together and their styles. It's a lot of fun to watch. Tony, we appreciate you. We always feel a little more educated every time we get somebody on from MLS on. You certainly did that for us here today.
Yes, you should have heard our questions the first week, Tony. We weren't quite this on top of it.
I think I asked about shin guards. So.
Yeah, so we're coming along here.
Come on, XA. Look, there's no stupid questions when it comes to soccer. Hey, we all come out with some stupid lines as well. You know that. So there's no doubt that, you know, it's great to be on. It's great to talk about the team. And it's great to see a new market in San Diego. I'm a huge, huge NFL fan. One of the reasons I kind of, you know, when the opportunity came to move to the States, it was to embrace the American sports culture. And, you know, I watched the San Diego Chargers for so many years. And so, you know, I know what that was like with the team leaving. And so it's wonderful to see some of that void, you know, filled with a soccer team now moving into the city as well. So, you know, it's great to be on with you all. And I really hope that, you know, the brand and the team continues to grow in Southern California.
No doubt. Tony, we appreciate your time. I will catch up again
soon.
Thanks,
Tony.
No problem.
Tony Husband, play-by-play for MLS Season Pass. We got to get to break on the other side. We got some interesting topics that Chris will cover.
Yeah, I'm going to go home. I'm going home. I'll see you in a half an hour.
Chris, you have to actually break down the first article about Drake and Kendrick.
All right. So if you want to hear a bunch of gobbledygook, I'll do what I can.
Okay.
More gobbledygook on the other side.
Coming up on Friday's show, we're going to have a preview of
the round table coming up at 5:00. That's the Padres round table, brought to you by Round Table. So a lot of round table happening at 5:00. An hour of commercial-free talk about the 15-4 Padres with myself and Ben and Woodsy and Scraby and Braden and Paul. Good group.
Yeah.
Ben does a great job. I'm not trying to schmooze Ben.
No, he does.
He just does a really good job putting all that thing together, and we just kind of follow the lead. But right now, we all said the same thing kind of coming into it today, Tony, and that is, the Padres are 15-4. It's getting harder and harder to come up with superlatives to keep describing them. You know, there's no negative to say. Yeah. And it's all just so good. What else is there to do?
I've run out.
Sure. Just kick back and keep enjoying as long as it can.
People want us to rip it apart, though. Which I don't even know how you can right now.
Who's people? That one guy who tweeted you today?
No, Doomers. Doomers.
Uh-huh.
They want to be like.
I honestly don't think there's that many doomers out there.
I just think
they're the loudest in the room.
They are, but they're also very quiet right now. So they're all waiting together.
They're waiting to be doomers?
Oh, they're waiting for something to happen. The first 3-game losing streak. I knew this team was garbage. Xander Bogaerts.
It's only funny because it's probably
true. Oh, somebody's already taped that message and they just are going to hit the play button when they lose 3 in a row. And I say when because they will lose 3 in a row at some point.
No, they won't.
Okay. you know, one last thing, and then we're going to get to your crazy 30-mile zone today where we're talking about stuff I know nothing about. I think this was honestly designed just to make me look dumb. So we'll see what
wasn't the intention, but I'll take that.
I'm sure you
result.
I just want to point this out, and I think I have a couple times, but a reminder, the Padres are 15-4 despite the fact that they're not nearly at 100% health. Jackson Merrill will not even play on this road trip, nor will Brandon Lockridge. There's no telling when Jake Cronenworth will come back or Yu Darvish. They're playing the whole season without Joe Musgrove. So the fact that they have this good a record with all of that going on is one thing. The second thing to me, which is surprising, Tony, 19 home runs this year, 16 are solo shots. The other 3 are 2-run homers. So they have done what they have done without a single 3-run homer or obviously grand slam this year. They haven't had what you would really call the big fly. Yet they're still finding enough ways to win. I saw last night during the Dodger game, LA is scoring 60% of its runs on the home run. That's good if you can hit a home run every night or two, but I like what the Padres are doing a little better because they have different ways they can score. Serving them well.
Yes, no, I agree. I think that's, you know, I think ultimately it's tough. When you're depending on the homer that much, you're going to go through some dry spells. But I also think that they depend on the homer, but they can also play the other way as well. But
right.
The point is, I think it's tough to win, you know, long term. That wasn't the case last year, that they were scoring that much high of a percentage on the home run.
Yes,
last
it's year early, so it'll change probably. Yeah. All right, Scraby, go ahead. Time to embarrass me after traffic.
If you don't know your sports gossip, can you really call yourself a sports fan? It's time to bring together sports and celebrity gossip. We call it the 30 Mile Zone, mainly so we don't get sued by the real company. On 97.3 The Fan.
I think it's smart to ease into our stories today because of the biggest story that we have in the mix. So I'm going to start with something that happened at the Harbortown Classic today. I don't even know if it's called that anymore.
But it's a golf tournament.
It's a golf tournament. It's in South Carolina at Harbortown. It used to be the RBC Heritage. I still think it is. What is his name? Why did I just forget his name? The golfer that I'm going to talk... Billy Horschel. Sorry. Jeez. Billy Horschel drove one on the 10th tee, Chris. And it hit a fan. I'm going to put up the picture of the fan's leg that he autographed because he hit the fan.
He autographed the leg.
The place where the ball hit. Ugh. And you can see a massive lump.
Yes, there is.
Massive lump. So he signed it. He circled it. Apparently the fan was very excited that this happened to them. I have actually been at a golf tournament. I was at the U.S. Open in San Francisco when they played at the Olympic Club last time. And I was standing next to a guy who got hit by a drive off the tee. And let me tell you, he went down like a sack of potatoes. It was like, wow, this dude just got hit. He's on the ground. I don't know what to do.
Wait, where'd he get hit?
He got hit in the head. And I walked away because I didn't want to be anywhere near it. I was like, this is crazy.
Good job by you. Way to come to the person's aid.
I'm sorry. I should laugh at that because he could have been hurt.
Well, Scraby didn't care. Was he all right? Scraby just walked off. He doesn't know if he was okay. He left the scene.
I did leave the scene. I didn't want anything to do with that.
Can you imagine the sound that it would
have? Oh, I will never forget the sound. Like, it's like a... It's like a little bit, it sounds a little bit like lettuce being thrown into the ground, but like harder. I don't
lettuce.
Know. I will
lettuce.
Never forget this sound. It's so bad. So she's all right and everything. My dad also got hit by a golf ball by Lucas Glover. And he said, Lucas Glover came over and offered him a glove. And he said, my dad said, no, I'm good. I just didn't want to.
It would have been better if his name was Lucas Icer and he offered him some ice because that's what he needed.
Know, that is true.
Glove wasn't going to help.
Icer. All right, moving on.
Real quick, did Tyrone Taylor, the Mets, sign Hunter Wendelstedt's
head? I was just
head?
About to bring that up because okay. Hunter Wendelstedt, we did this yesterday on the show, but we didn't get Tony's opinion on it. And Tony was telling us before we talked about this, that Hunter Wendelstedt is one of the better umpires that he likes in baseball.
Well, hold up.
You like him.
I like him.
Yes. Not better. Okay.
I don't know that his
You like him
umpiring,
as a person.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, I'm going to play the video in the background, but he got hit with a line drive foul ball down the first baseline yesterday. He went down pretty hard, and we asked yesterday, Tony, do umpires need to start wearing helmets?
Oh. That's a bad angle.
That is the perfect angle for
right,
it.
Right, yeah.
But he apparently is okay. From all the things that I'm reading, he's alert and all that stuff. But he did take a foul ball right off the side of the head. So,
I'm
otherwise known as the coconut.
I mean, he didn't know which way to go. I think that's
yeah,
what got
he kinda
him.
He kind of walked into it.
He did. Like his the movements that he were making didn't seem like they went against not getting hit.
No.
Seemed like they moved. He moved right into it, but I hope it sounds like he's all right.
Yeah,
from what I gather.
Yeah,
saw this last night, and I do think he is. He's I enjoyed Hunter, but I don't know that he's considered a great umpire in terms of the actual
calls.
May
scramble up a few of his calls for a week or two.
Oh, yeah. It's already happened. When you Google his name, you get Hunter Wendelstedt did this in the game. Sassy Hunter Wendelstedt.
Yeah. Yeah. Not gonna
so should they wear a helmet, Tony, or do you think that they eventually will is probably a better question.
I mean, they can. I mean, remember, I don't know if you guys remember why they're wearing...
No, I told him yesterday. I told him yesterday. Right.
And, you know, the interesting thing about that is I believe Poole got hit in the clotted artery, like in his throat. It wasn't even
the helmet would not have protected him even.
No, but I don't think it's... I mean, can you argue against more protection? I mean, I don't think so.
You sound bad if you argue against it, but I don't personally see the need for it. It's a once in a 5,000 game thing that happens, if that even. So now I sound like I don't care.
That's what I'm saying. I know. Sound like you don't want to.
I know.
All right. Let's get to the biggest story of today's 30 Mile Zone.
Scraby's been dying to do this.
Well, the only reason I put it in there is because Tony's all about
this. I just want to make sure. Can you come to me
first?
When
have I ever brought this up on during the
You haven't brought
show.
Up this exact point, but you've brought up the Drake and Kendrick Lamar beef many times off the air.
Yeah, I want you to come to me first on this. I don't want Tony to steal my thunder here.
Oh, okay. I wonder what you're going to say. Drake is very unhappy with Kendrick Lamar's Super Bowl halftime show, and he just filed an amended complaint where he specifically mentions Kendrick's performance of Not Like Us at the Super Bowl. The docs obtained by TMZ show that Drake claims Kendrick, quote-unquote, assassinated his character, and he says Kendrick excluded the word pedophile from the lyrics. And it backs up Drake's claim that the song's content is defamatory because he didn't say it during the performance. Drake says dropping the word pedophile from the lyrics was the only change made to it, and he claims Kendrick would not have gotten the green light to sing the song unless he removed that word from it. And he says, quote, that is because nearly everyone understands that is defamatory to falsely brand someone a certified pedophile. So it's going to court. I don't know who's going to win here, but is Drake just seems to me. Actually, you know what, Chris, I'm going to you first.
You're supposed to go to Chris first.
Yep, going to you first.
Well, here's the thing about this. I mean, it's kind of surprising that it has come to this. I mean, they collaborated on "Buried Alive" interlude in 2011. Lamar sang a 2-minute interlude on Drake's song. They actually worked together. Then you go forward to 2013, 2 years later, and they get in a big feud because Lamar's verse on the Big Sean song "Control" supposedly was something that Drake didn't like. Now Drake came back with his next song. Anyway, I've really been thinking about. I can't believe it's come to this. I wish they could just become friends again.
I don't think it's ever going to happen.
No, I don't either.
Tony's giving you an applause. I'm going to give you an applause.
I looked it up just so I wouldn't be too stupid. But I will say this: if this came into my courtroom, it'd get tossed in a hurry.
Really?
I don't see even a case here. Honestly, I don't. But Tony probably knows more than me.
Oh man, everybody loved that. Chris nailed it. W for Chris. Epic Ello. Dang Ello, dropping some knowledge.
That's right.
Good for you, Chris.
Yes. Tony, you got anything on this since you follow this story every day?
It's silly. I don't follow it every day. But it is silly, though. This is a rap beef that someone is upset that they got beat in.
You know, some may say doth protest too much.
Who?
Drake's protesting too much. If you protest too much, the thing that you're protesting is true.
If you click on the article that you put in the thing,
I'm here.
The Universal Music Group, quite spicy with their. They're filing today.
Do you want me to read that?
Yeah, you should. I think it's kind of funny.
All right. A spokesperson for Universal Music Group tells TMZ, quote, Drake, unquestionably one of the world's most accomplished artists and with whom we've enjoyed a 16-year successful relationship, is being misled by his legal representatives into taking one absurd legal step after another. In Texas last November, his counsel instituted a legal proceeding with much fanfare and bluster. On Monday, they quietly dropped the case. And it goes on and on. So even his music group is not a fan of
this. They're going to have to drop this case. I don't see any base for this case. The guy was singing his song, Kendrick, right? And he intentionally left lyrics out so as not to be defamatory.
In the real song, he says it. Right, Tony?
Yeah, it's less. I think it's less. It's less about he's using the Super Bowl to try to prove that that is why it's a defamatory that
because he took it out knowing
he
that
took
it
out knowing that it was. I think that's what he used it for. But listen, this I don't think this is going to go very far. I think discovery is going to have to come on both sides, and I don't know.
I don't know if Drake wants people poking around his stuff.
You know what I'm saying? It just seems like this is a little silly.
Yeah, he's getting a little crazy.
Get out of my courtroom.
Here's another crazy story that I never thought I would see. Former NFL superstar Aaron Donald had to file for a restraining order and received a restraining order this week against a woman he says has been harassing, stalking, and threatening him and his family for several years. He alleged Janelle Anwar has been terrorizing him since 2020. He said that he's never met the woman, who he believes is between 30 and 40 years old, but she's sent him packages, gifts, and messages repeatedly. He also claimed that Anwar actually believes that she's married to Aaron Donald and filed a disillusion action against him last month, demanding $1,500 per month and a settlement of $6.5 million. The court filing did say Anwar is delusional, and I fear that her delusions will lead to her attempting to harm me, my wife, my children, and my brother. Perhaps most disturbingly, Donald wrote in the docs that Anwar recently threatened his 3-year-old son's life in a Google chat. So, there you go. This is very scary. This is extremely scary. And Aaron Donald is doing the right thing, but I don't even know what to say about something like this. This sounds like someone who is having a mental health crisis. The lady Janelle Anwar.
These kinds of things pop up, and this is part of the world of a celebrity, and it shouldn't be, but it unfortunately... The tennis player, Raducanu?
Yeah.
Had the fan stalking her come to one of her matches.
Matches, yeah.
She broke down, couldn't even play tennis with this person in the stands. This is going on far too much. Yeah. But other than being secure, and we look at some of these celebs and we go, why do they have 14 security people around?
This is why.
This is why, yeah. Yes. This is why you have to, almost.
It really does, I mean... In today's society, being famous almost comes with this to different levels, right? This is probably the highest level, right, in terms of craziness. But, I mean, that's what you do. Sometimes the simple life is just a little bit better in terms of the extracurricular you got to deal with.
But then when you do have a crazy person harassing you, no one wants to do anything because you're not famous.
What I would like to think is that you could get some support from the justice court system, whatever.
You got a restraining
order. What does that really do?
It's supposed to be a deterrent.
But somebody like this, is that really a deterrent though?
I don't think so.
The scariest cases to me are the ones they're in a relationship.
Yeah, you're within 100 feet.
Yeah, when you're in 60 feet, get away. You know, that's not going to do
anything. I can't even imagine someone being like, I'm filing for dissolution of our marriage, and you owe me $6.5 million.
And
like,
you don't even know her.
That's crazy.
This is going to be an oversimplification because I don't mean to make light of people that do have mental illness, and that does exist in this world.
It does.
In a case like this... Yeah, you're going to have to check somebody in.
I
mean, you just are. I mean, if you're honestly going through life thinking this, they need a little help here.
Yeah, they do.
That would be better than giving them a restraining order, frankly.
But like Tony said, it's like the first step into, all right, next time it gets a little bit more serious.
Right, because you know,
yeah, paperwork
it's all good if the person is smart enough not to respect the restraining order.
Yeah.
If they don't, I mean, that's probably scary in itself. Like, they showing up, like, they clearly don't care about it.
Yeah. That.
At that point, like, what do you do? Like,
At that point, you hope that they lock her up.
Yeah, that's scary.
All right, let's get this last story in before we head to break. But Lee Corso, ESPN's College Game Day guy, it has been announced that he is going to be retiring from ESPN's College Game Day. He's going to do week one on August 30th, and then he's going to retire. He's 89. He's going to be 90 when the finale happens, but I'm sorry, guys. I'm going to pour cold water on this. Never been a Lee Corso guy. I think he's just kind of ridiculous.
I'm not going to pour cold water. I have watched Game Day for a long time. I think it was time for Lee to retire.
I thought he did retire like 8 years ago.
No, he was on there last year, and I'm not going to lie. At times, and that crew around him does a really good job of being able to support him, because it's not the same Lee Corso that we had grown accustomed to, where he was, you know, super energetic, throwing on the mascot, or when he was picking the teams. It's not that same no more. He looks like it's time for him to get some rest.
Yeah. Chris?
I'm looking this up, 30 years ago that he first donned the headgear. It was for an Ohio State game. They won the game. He put the headgear on. They won, so now everybody wanted him to do that moving forward. Probably should have, you know, 89-year-old people don't walk around in headgear like this.
Right. So what? I don't care how old
you didn't
he
mind
is.
That.
No.
But yeah, it was time. But give him credit, man. He hung in there. He did everything awesome. He could for as long as he could. I'm okay with it. You know, I understand it was a little difficult, you know, to try to get him through a few sentences there. But, you know, so be it, man. He hung in, and he was worth it. I think people wanted to still watch him.
I totally get that. I never was really a College Game Day person anyway, because I didn't go to a college that had football. So
Lee Corso's only bowl victory as a head coach was right here. The Holiday Bowl 20 years ago. He's the head coach of Indiana, and they beat BYU. For that, I thank you, Lee Corso.
It always comes back to that.
That
is it for 30 Mile Zone. When we get back, we have Chris versus the fans. You're going to be playing for a qualification for a grand prize to Las Vegas. So give us a call, 833-288-0973.